this edition of Sprouts. Satellite distribution is made possible by Jim Bennett and Pacifica Radio. Internet distribution by the High Country Community Radio Coalition. Thanks to Debbie Linehart at KRFC and to Ursula Rudin. Visit our website at sproutsradio.org. There you can listen to past episodes, send your thoughts on the show, and find out how to produce your own radio stories. We'll be back next week with another edition of Sprouts, Radio from the Roots.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org, it's the city-famous Bathrobes Piers Broadsides with your host. That's me, Robert Norris. Today's April 27th, 2006. Special guests coming into the studio to report a police assault downtown on Pacific Avenue. Stay tuned. A little trouble with the equipment here, folks. Let's see what we can do with this machine. This is a show concerned with the civil rights of poor people. And hopefully the equipment won't be poor. I'm having a little trouble getting the CD player to operate properly. So I will use my emergency shift-o-change-o approach. And we will proceed as before. Stay with us. Still having some problems. So what I'm going to do, instead of my usual exciting musical introduction, I will simply proceed to the main deal here. My name is Robert Norris. This is a show that concerns itself with local political issues and hopes occasionally to get a little music in every now and then. Let's see if I can actually do that. I don't know. I guess I'm going to go directly to an interview, and I apologize for lacking the introduction, but I can't seem to get the CD player to work. Not sure why that is, but no doubt I'll be informed later what the problem is. So stay with me, and we will proceed. So it's about 10 to 1 on April 26th, Wednesday, in front of the Longs at downtown Santa Cruz. We're talking with
David.
And David, you're a man all dressed in white.
Yes, I am.
And you have a you're fighting drug abuse, helping a particular church, which is the Missionary Church of the Disciples of Jesus Christ.
Yes, we do.
And you're all the way, coming all the way from Salinas.
Salinas.
So how many days a week do you do this?
From Sunday to Thursday.
And do you get paid, or are you doing this for love?
Voluntary.
Wow. So do you have any other job, or do you have a rich uncle?
No. I dedicated my life to this because they helped me out of drugs, so I want to dedicate my life now helping other people.
And what else do you do when you're not doing this? What kind of work do you do?
Well, we mostly dedicate our life helping the church by doing this voluntary work, and they help us, and they give us everything we need.
So how many people are in the church?
Well, we got churches all over California and mostly all over the United States. You know, there's like 20 people in each church.
Mm-hmm. And is there a church in Santa Cruz?
Well, we're thinking of putting one here, but we haven't found like a spot.
Now, is it a church? I notice you have a Spanish accent. I assume Spanish is your first language.
Yes.
And is that the case with most folks in the church, or is there a majority either way?
Well, it's majority either way. We got whites, blacks, we got everything.
Mm-hmm. And
What kind of programs do you have? You say the church takes care of you. What does it mean? It arranges your housing, pays for your food. What's the deal?
Well, actually, we live in a mission, and they help us with the clothes and food.
And how long have you been with the church?
3 years, thanks to God.
And did you come from the streets, from another situation? Were you incarcerated? What was the deal?
Well, actually, I was in Orange County, and I was living in the streets doing drugs and gangs.
What kind of drugs?
Crystal, meth.
For how long had you been doing that?
Like 6 years.
And so you haven't been doing it for 3 years?
Yes, sir.
And how's it feel otherwise? Are you happy with the scene and the mission?
Yeah, I'm very happy with God because he took me off of the streets and now I could help other people get out of the same problems I was in.
And what do you see in Santa Cruz? Because I guess you come mostly to Long's, right?
Yeah, and Trader Joe's and Capitola.
Okay, so what do you have any sense of what the situation is with gangs and drugs here, or do you just sort of see mostly a bunch of, most of us are honkies here in Santa Cruz, but I guess, and in Capitola, too. So you got the white scene here, right?
Yes, sir.
But what do you have any sense of what Salinas, however, is a large Latino population.
Yeah, they are.
In fact, you were telling me that on May 1st, it's Ningún Humano Es Ilegal, ¿verdad?
Yes, sir.
So tell me about that. What's coming up on May 1st for the folks in the church around that?
That's No Human Is Illegal, a little button I wear. For those of you who don't speak Spanish.
There's going to be a walkout in Salinas. I heard San Jose is doing one. It's going to start, I think it's around 10. They're going to start walking to the city halls.
Has there been much harassment of people by immigration authorities in your church?
Well, they say they want to check even the churches if they have illegal people to take them out and take them to Tijuana, they're saying.
And also arrest the church people, of course, for feeding them.
Yeah, for having the illegal people with them.
And what do people think? I hesitate to ask, but what do people think about that in the church?
Well, you know, we're trying to do what we can, trying to help, you know, like everybody, because that's not right. No.
I hear you. Any particular message you want to put out in Spanish to folks out there?
Well, like you say, Latinos Unidos nunca serán vencidos.
The people united will never be defeated, or the Latinos united will never be defeated.
Latinos Unidos can be defeated.
And Latinos y todas otras también unidos, espero. All of us united.
Yeah.
And how do you say we'll never be defeated?
Nunca seremos vencidos.
Nunca seremos vencidos?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to learn my Spanish from you. I'll come by tomorrow to get another lesson.
All right.
We've been talking with
David.
Thanks, David.
No problem.
With Sally, who's playing.
Hi.
Hi. What are you playing there, Sally?
Banjo.
And you've been doing some twanging for about an hour now?
A little under an hour, yeah.
No hassles from the hosts here, because you're in front of the Downtown Information Center, right?
Yep, no hassles.
You have a police car in back of you. You got the Downtown Information Center in front of you. One of your customers, or shall we say people appreciating your music, was just told to move from his spot. How's the money going? Are you making any money?
A little bit, not as much as usual, but, you know.
What's the average take for, say, an hour's work like this?
I don't know. It depends.
No standard amount? Or?
No, not today.
Okay. So you'll be announcing something at some point, but now you have no particular news to give us?
No. There's going to be a benefit show for a tour on women's fertility awareness and women's reproductive systems. But that benefit show will probably be May 5th or 6th, but I don't know quite yet.
And this is like an organization or an idea or?
No, it's just a couple people who are doing the tour.
And what exactly, tell me what this benefits again?
It's It's a tour about women's reproductive health and about fertility awareness.
Any songs about that subject?
No, I don't have any songs.
But you're singing, and you tend to do some benefit for the the group.
Yeah.
Okay. We've been talking with?
Sally.
Hey, Sally. I'm going to get a picture. So it's around 20 to 2 at Pacific and Cathcart. And we've got a man on a harmonica with a sign in front of him.
Thanks.
Traveling, broken, hungry, anything helps. Where are you traveling to?
Venice right now.
And where are you coming from?
Portland, Oregon.
And how's the pickings in Santa Cruz?
Pretty good, actually. It's a nice day.
Yeah, we're lucky. It's been, it's been sunny for the last couple of days.
Pretty nice, though.
What's your name?
Josh.
And you are?
Gabriel.
And Portland, Oregon, is that constant rain up in Portland?
Or? No, not at all.
That's just a myth?
It's a myth. Oregon's constant rain, but not Portland. Portland's really nice right about now.
What's happening with Dignity Village? Does anybody know?
Oh, it's done. It's over with up in Portland.
Huh?
On waterfront.
I'm not sure where it is. I'm told.
Yeah, it's on waterfront by the steel bridge.
Yeah. How is that? What's happened with it?
Oh, it's gone.
It has been removed?
Yes, they don't let them camp there anymore.
And did they move somewhere else or did they disappear?
Yeah, they moved somewhere else under bridges in the outskirts of Portland and stuff.
And what's happening with people who are homeless in Portland? How do they get along? Are they arrested for sleeping and so forth?
No.
People can sleep without being hassled?
Some places you'll get hassled and stuff.
Are you speaking from experience yourself or from
experience?
So let's give an example. Where did you sleep up there that you didn't get hassled?
Oh, I got squats and stuff, abandoned buildings and bridges that the cops don't go to. But I can't give those locations because
of course not.
They're still campable right now, so.
Sure. But what about outside? Any places outside?
Yeah, I have some outside squats and stuff under bridges.
How many people would you estimate are doing that in Portland these days? Hundreds, thousands, dozens?
There's probably a few thousand homeless.
And how does it compare with what you've seen in your travels here, or are you sort of just so new to the area you don't know yet?
Oh, I'm not that new to the area. I travel a lot, so.
How is Portland comparatively?
If you go hungry in Portland, you're stupid. That's all I got to say. And it's pretty much like that anywhere you go. If you go hungry, you're stupid. You don't know what to look for.
How about Sisters of the Road? Are they still there?
Yeah, Sisters of the Road is still in Portland. And I even got barter coupons for Sisters of the Road in my wallet right now.
And Street Roots is still operating?
Yeah. Yeah. They have feedings under the Skidmore Fountain every night. And on the weekends, Sundays, they have a big feeding on Sunday under all the bridges and stuff.
And here in Santa Cruz, you've been here for a couple of days?
I've been here since yesterday.
Any preliminary impressions?
It's a pretty nice town. I like it.
First time here?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I've got. Anything you want to say to Free Radio?
Huh?
To the audience out there?
Nothing really.
Hey, thank you. And any particular harmonica music for us before we leave?
I'll play some blues.
Okay. Thank you. And we've been talking with
Josh
and
Gabriel.
Thank you, Gabriel. I'm Robert. Well, and that's a little bit from the streets. There'll be more from the streets later. There's always more from the streets. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. On the phone with us is a man with an announcement about a meditation for peace in Iraq. Am I right on that, caller?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your name, caller?
Burl, B-U-R-Y-L.
Hey, Burl, are you in Santa Cruz, or where are you calling from?
I am Santa Cruz.
And what's happening? What's this meditation about?
Okay, I direct the Academy for Peace Research.
Uh-huh.
We've been doing experiments in thought power, mass thought power, since 1979.
Cool.
Yeah, so we have shown that during the 80s, several million people meditating on world peace six times a year for 3.5 years apparently decreased the solar activity.
Wow. And
this was predicted by Andrew Casey.
Now, how do you
where do you get your stats from on this?
The government, NOAA, out of Boulder, publishes that every day.
What's the website this comes off of?
Oh, my gosh. It's a complicated thing.
Anyway, but anyway, you have an announcement to make, right? What's the announcement?
Yeah, the announcement is we're now doing an experiment to see if we could help raise the consciousness of some of the people in Iraq.
You mean like you're talking about the people that are getting shot by the American occupation force, perhaps? Or are you talking about the American soldiers or the fine bureaucrats who are building military bases? Who are you talking about?
All of them that have that kind of mentality, that killing and fighting is the only way to solve problems.
Huh.
And so, it's not to impose our standards on them, but to suggest that maybe in the dream mind even, that they could have alternatives.
I see.
And they might get them from their own dreams or high self or whatever you want to call it.
So is this, first of all, do you have a physical location? Could people kind of come and get more information either by calling you or going online or coming to your
office?
Best
thing is it's right at the top of my website, burl.com.
One more time?
Burl.com.
Spelled?
B-U-R-Y-L.
Okay.
And sunset for 11 days, starting tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll be gathering at the beach on Monday.
Which beach?
7th Avenue Beach.
Uh-huh.
At 7.
7 o'clock, 7th Avenue Beach on Monday, which will be, what's the date on
May
that?
May 1st.
May 1st. That's the day, of course, when all the... we're all going to walk out and stop the harassment of people as illegals, right?
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's 7 o'clock on the 7th Avenue Beach on Monday.
Yeah, and every night at sunset.
And every night at sunset.
Great.
Hey, thank you, Burl.
Okay.
All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And actually, the voices you hear in the studio in the background are not from the ether. They're actually real live guests in the studio here. And we have two spirits with us, also people, Shane and Donna. Why don't you say hello, you two? Right. Belly up to the mic and
hello.
A little closer. Yeah, you know, if you want, you can take hello. That mic out of there and hold it up to you, or you can. There you go. You know, see now you look like one of those people who walks around the
hello.
Audience. Hey, very good, very good. And now I got. You didn't want me to introduce you as, you know, any special person, but I'm going to do it anyway because I've done a lot of great work in the past. We're talking to Donna Dice, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz worker in the older days, and nowadays apparently an observer of police misconduct on the streets by the account I heard on the phone several days ago and also by a lengthy email that you sent me. I'm not sure we should talk with the victim first, or the person who alleges he's the victim. Shane is the other guest in the studio. Say hello, Shane.
Hello.
Hi.
How you doing?
Now, you want to tell us, this involved an incident that happened on Pacific Avenue, what, Tuesday, Monday?
Tuesday, right?
A little closer to the mic.
About 1
there
o'clock, Tuesday.
Okay. And where on the Pacific Avenue did it happen?
It happened right across the street from the Santa Cruz Roasting Company. You know that empty lot where it's got
a
fence on it?
The Rittenhouse hole,
right.
The fence.
The hole, right.
Yeah,
right.
The fence.
Yeah.
And you, just kind of give me a blow-by-blow of how it all, even before it started, what set the scene for
us. Okay. The scene is we discovered a friend with a dead battery stuck.
And where was the person parked? Or?
Yeah, parked on Pacific Avenue.
Uh-huh.
And we just, you know, we're making them, you know, giving them a jump. We were just, you know, we just let you know, our friend use our truck to pull in, you know, real tight to get a jump. And what I was doing was guiding Bliss in to get to the cables because they weren't reaching. It was a tough...
Bliss is the friend you're talking about?
Right.
Was his truck.
Right.
Uh-huh, okay.
And so the cables weren't making it, you know, and so I was edging them in closer and closer.
So now, meaning you, let me see if I understand this properly. Bliss was parked, and then you had another vehicle coming up that was going to be kind of right side by side, so the car could be jumped.
They were side by side.
They were side by side, and so there was a room for other cars to get around.
Yeah.
There was, and what were you doing then?
What was I doing? Oh, well, I was working the jumper cables, trying to make a good connection and holding, because they weren't reaching.
Uh-huh, okay, and so you're having some trouble getting the jump
right.
going. And were cars backed up, or was it, was it a free traffic? Cars
they weren't backed up. They were, not until the cops showed up.
You know, that may be the next chapter in this story. So what happened then, Shane?
Well, this cop pulls up and says, because I was giving hand signals to Bliss.
Santa Cruz police officer?
Right. Right, because I was giving hand signals to Bliss to get him to pull in tighter and tighter.
Uh-huh.
The officer said I was directing traffic and I was breaking the law and he was going to write me a ticket.
Now, where were you when he gave you this instruction or made this statement?
I think I just finished the jump start and Donna had just driven off.
Okay, but where exactly were you? Were you in the middle of the street?
No.
Were you on the side of the street?
Sidewalk.
Were you standing on top of a building?
No, I was on the sidewalk.
You're on the sidewalk. And... Right. Were you shouting at the top of your lungs?
No.
Were you urinating on the car?
No.
Perhaps you were stealing some woman's purse.
Right. Okay.
No, okay. Now, perhaps you were smashing a vehicle.
You want my soldering iron, right?
Yeah, right. So you what you were doing is you were in front of the vehicle with... Did you have the jump cables in your hand?
Yeah,
or
I did. I was holding them on the battery.
And yet you were directing traffic. I'm not quite
right.
sure I understand. So what is that? What was that? What
yeah,
was
there
this?
Is a confliction there, right? Well, there was a point in time where I had to stop and give him hand signals to guide him in closer.
To guide who in closer?
The guy who was driving her truck to jumpstart the van.
So somebody else was driving your truck, Donna.
Correct.
Where had you gone, Donna? Let me ask you that.
I took a short walk and came back in about 5 minutes.
Right. So you'd taken a walk while this was going
right.
on. So there was a driver in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
The truck, you were kind of helping the truck get in closer
right.
to the vehicle with a dead battery.
Yeah.
And then a police officer in a Santa Cruz black and white or maybe
right.
white and blue.
I think it was black and white.
Came driving by, and did the police officer, he then said something to you or?
Yeah, he rolled his window down or it was already halfway down or something like that. And he stuck his head out and he showed his teeth and grunted and said, "Hey, buddy, you're not allowed to be directing traffic out here." And then threatened to ticket me.
And... At the moment he was doing that, what exactly were you doing?
I just was, like, surprised. I just like, okay, whatever. if you feel that strongly about it, then give me a ticket.
I see.
I was, like, passive about it, basically. Like, it was a joke, because to me it was a joke. I mean, it wasn't... I was surprised it was even happening.
So what were you doing, though, when he made...
In other words, standing there.
You were... when he said you're directing traffic, what was he referring to?
I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure. All I know is that I was trying to get... Bliss to pull in as tight as he could, and one of the cops was on foot, I think, too.
But there was a second police officer.
Yeah, there was, and he came in later on. And what happened was the actual.
Before you get to that, though, let's stick with the first police officer.
Okay.
Because I want to.
All right.
I want to give you a caution before we proceed. You are ultimately charged with a criminal offense here, and if you
Correct.
Want to stop right now because you haven't spoken to an attorney yet.
Oh, I have spoken to an attorney, and I have an appointment tomorrow at noon.
Right, but I mean, did you tell an attorney that you were going to discuss your case on the air in a file that can be saved? Because the police may not be listening to this now, but this show is archived, so anybody can go back to
care.
It.
I don't care. The circumstances that this case is built on are so pathetic anyway.
Oh, I understand.
I don't see how I could possibly hurt it.
Remember that the police, particularly if they make a mistake, may be eager to convict you to cover up their mistake.
Really?
And And if they can persuade the district and the district attorney to take the case, which isn't too hard. I'm, for example, going to trial on May 22nd for charges that may seem preposterous to a lot of people.
Okay.
Disrupting a council meeting by standing at a microphone.
Right.
A strange kind of disruption. Then they may go after you. So I advised you beforehand that perhaps it might be better to let Donna give her account of what she understood happened, some of which she saw, some of which she heard from other people, rather than have you speak, because you have the right not to testify right now. But once you've spoken on the microphone here, they can take it to court and say, this is your testimony.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you shouldn't, because I'm the broadcaster. I love to have this stuff.
I appreciate that. That was very wise. That was very good.
Right. And I think the story, it might be possible to get this story out without having you make statements here which might be twisted by eager prosecutors, slimy police operatives, and misunderstood by collusive judges.
But there is one thing I want to say.
Please, you can say anything you want. Okay. I mean, you've got free speech.
I'm going to say this.
You can
confess
on the air.
Well, I don't feel comfortable about this, but I'm going to admit it anyway. I have full-blown AIDS.
You have full-blown AIDS.
Correct.
How long have you had AIDS?
5 years.
And how has this impacted your life in terms of what kind of...
I have no stamina at all. Uh-huh. I'm pouring sweat by 5 o'clock in the evening. You can hear my voice now. It's cracking. I mean, I'm having trouble, just maintaining because my nerves are so fatigued.
Have some water, by the way.
Yeah, it's good water. Mm-hmm. I just started my cocktail.
Is the collection of medications
right,
you take.
Right, and they're very powerful. They make you feel drunk. You spin and spin. Your hearing changes. You see everything differently. You're on your butt. You're on your back the first few nights.
What the prosecutor may ask you, I'm not going to ask you this question because I'm not the prosecutor. I'm not the defense attorney. But a question you're likely to be asked in court was, oh, so you were all wild and crazy from your cocktail.
No,
you don't have to say anything.
Okay, all right, well,
just anticipate that's the kind of question you get. You don't have to say anything before.
I'm going to answer that right now.
No, you don't want to answer that right now.
I do, because an AIDS cocktail, everybody knows that the AIDS cocktail makes you nothing but sick.
I don't want to ask that question. I want to ask instead, regarding this illness you have, which of course is a life-threatening illness,
right?
Were the police officers informed
about
this?
Yes, they were, by several witnesses, and he said he did not care.
Now, this of course is one of the key issues we wanted to bring up, and I believe Donna. So let's carry this story a little further. At what point, Donna, did you come up?
I came up to see that Bliss had been standing there and observing the whole thing.
Bliss is the owner of the car that you were trying that
we were trying to help.
Trying to jump with your car.
He was, interested in getting it out of there as soon as possible, as I can understand. We all know how heavily patrolled Pacific Avenue is, and, nobody wants to get in the heat, so to speak. So I came walking up to Bliss about 3 feet away from Shane. He was sitting in the ditch on Pacific Avenue against a chain-length fence with his handcuffs on behind his back where he could not get up. Right. And the police officer grabbed him and slammed him against the fence.
Twice, in and out, jerked me like this, pulled me.
And said, now I got you for battery.
Yep, that's right.
Because when he shoved him against the fence, his head went in reflex action. The top of his head
his
big belly.
Big old fat belly.
And he realized he had never given any charges to Shane.
I was never even told I was being detained.
He just walked up and put the handcuffs on.
That's right.
I asked him politely, would you please not take him to jail? He can't take it. His health is very precarious. He might die in jail. And he laughed at me.
Yeah, he did. He
laughed. And said, I don't care.
Yeah.
Name of this sensitive police officer was...
Number 173.
Do we know his actual name?
I think it was. All I remember is a big sewn-on patch that said D. Hernandez, but I could be wrong.
D. Hernandez, perhaps. Although we don't know. We don't want to defame D. Hernandez. In fact, it wasn't him. But there was an officer whose badge number was
713.
And who? How tall was he?
At least 6 foot. Surfer haircut. Blonde hair. At least 250 pounds.
Latino or white?
White. Very white.
Okay.
He's a big guy. He was big. And I was, I was 4 inches down in the dirt below him. There was no way I could have done what he said I did.
Let me ask you. I mean, I'm always going to direct my questions to you, Donna, because, whether you want to testify in court will be between you and your attorney and you and yourself, actually.
Right.
Fuck the attorney. although, put that aside. So, by the way, we're tuned to, all of us, hopefully out there, are tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. If you want to call in and have any questions or comments, you can talk to both of these guests, including me, at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. You can also join us at pagesincolor.com. That's the chat room, Pages in Color.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, pagesincolor.com. We got a chat room. And it's compliments of John Teal King. Thank you, John. And monitored by producer Becky Johnson. Thank you, Becky, who says a shout-out hello to you, Donna, and you, Shane. So let's follow this story a little bit, again, step by step. We've reached the point where Shane was told by this officer that he couldn't direct traffic. Now, Donna, what's your understanding of kind of slowly what happened next? I know we've gone ahead a bit beyond it, but let's go back.
He never said anything to Shane.
He drove
just
off.
Walked up to him, put the handcuffs on him.
Now we're talking about a second officer, right?
The blonde.
Let me set this straight.
The one on the
cop that started the whole thing in the car drove off and was laughing like it was all ended and like it was a joke. Then the cop on foot from across the street, I guess, got a call on his radio. They talked on the radios or something, and he came.
How much later did that happen?
Just 3 minutes. It was like just...
Now, meanwhile, what was happening with the vehicle?
Nothing. Nothing.
You were able to jump it?
Yeah, we jumped it.
So between the time of don't direct traffic and the right. officer driving off and laughing and the vehicle mm-hmm. And the next officer's coming up and you're... Sounds like he had a somewhat violent encounter with you.
Mm-hmm.
The vehicle was successfully jumped and left.
Right.
What happened to the other vehicle that was in the street, Donna's vehicle?
Well, actually, I don't...
You don't have to answer that question. If you want to, Donna, you can.
It was moved around the corner to a parking space.
I wasn't there.
Okay, and you weren't there. All right. So when you say you weren't there,
in the parking lot. Well, they're in the truck with her when she moved it.
Right. So she moved the vehicle.
I was in handcuffs.
So you were in the vehicle. I thought you were walking around on the street. How did you got back to the vehicle? Or
I got back to the vehicle before the officer slammed Shane into the fence with his handcuffs on behind his back.
Right. But before we get there, again, I'm at the point where the officers laughed, driven off, and now Shane has successfully jumped Bliss's car, and now who drives the vehicle off? Some other person?
Oh, you know what? He never left.
Who never left?
The guy that I jumped. It was sitting there running.
Oh, so the running car step was there, but
right.
whoever was in the car doing the jump, and who was that?
No, because Bliss, the owner of the van, was also driving the Bronco to jump it. Donna was out walking around. We just let him borrow our
right,
Bronco.
Right, but what happened to
it?
The second vehicle? Did you sit in the middle of the street going, or did the second vehicle?
No, he was parked the whole time.
Right, no, but the vehicle that did from which you did the jump, that moved on?
Right.
Yes.
And now, so this happened after the officer drove by in the car, had the exchange with
right.
you before the second officer came up.
Correct.
Now what had you done? What were you doing after you finished the jump? Then
oh,
what
I was
did
waiting,
you?
I was waiting to see where Donna was. I was waiting to see where Donna was and when I was going to be able to get out of there, because I wanted to go home. I was
and tired. Where were you waiting? What were you doing while you were waiting?
Nothing.
Standing?
Yeah,
sitting?
Standing. I was standing, just looking around, where is she, you know, type thing.
We're waiting for Donna.
Right, we're waiting
so
for Donna.
So, Donna, then you approached from which angle? Where did you come from?
I came towards the town clock.
You're on which side of the street?
On the left side of the street to the handicapped parking where Bliss was parked, which is his first space on
the side of the street where the fence
where
was.
Where it's going one way towards the clock and changes into two-way right past there.
So you were walking toward the clock.
Right.
From, you know, I don't know, from up where the coffee roasting company type area is. And
right.
But on the other side of the street where Starbucks is.
Yes.
And so you approach, and what did you see?
Bliss was standing there, a couple other people standing there that I don't know what their names were. People were walking by. Shane was sitting in a ditch with the handcuffs on, and the officer came up and slammed him against the fence, and his hands were in fists, and he looked like, boy, if he'd had him in a dark alley, he would have beat the mm-hmm. shit out of him.
Oh, yeah.
Now what did the officer say to, did you hear any remarks either from Shane or from the officer?
The officer said, oh, now I got you for battery.
That's right.
Because when he pushed Shane, his head, top of his head bumped the guy's belly.
Right.
Okay. And then what happened?
I'm so upset about this.
So then I started asking the people that were walking by, does anybody have a camera? I was very upset, and I don't believe the best thing is to be totally passive with the police. So I was asking people for a camera, and Bliss and a couple other people were saying, don't say anything, don't say anything.
They were nervous about the police.
But I don't like to give that kind of power to the police.
Well, I always have the greatest respect for the police, you know.
I try to be polite at first. Just, you know, that's the proper way to behave with all people. And he obviously did not have any communication skills. He was obviously called by the other cop because of his size and not because of his ability to resolve conflict.
Or perhaps he was simply nearby.
Yes.
Now,
that's true, too.
Did you hear afterward from anybody, because I'm not asking Shane these questions, to protect him, what... You think what happened? What transpired when this second officer approached Shane before he was put in handcuffs, exactly what communications went on.
I saw him after he was put in handcuffs.
Right, but you may have heard accounts. And what is your understanding of what happened, even though you weren't there? You may have heard it from Shane. You may have heard it from Bliss. You may have heard it from other witnesses.
He was sweating and exhausted, trying to help a friend, and he was leaning up against a pole trying to, you know, get a little breath back from doing the physical work.
And then what happened? As you understand it. I know you
weren't there. The police officer came up to him, did not say anything to him, did not give him any charges, just handcuffed him.
Well, it wasn't
like
that.
Like he was a rag doll. He's about 150 pounds more, you know, weight than Shane.
The rag doll part comes in when he was jerking me in off the fence. Because I let myself go to not have any resistance, so I was like a rag doll. That's where that expression came from.
I see.
And it appeared to me that he was trying to cover his ass.
Big time.
By laying this charge on Shane. So the sergeant came, scary, scary.
Scary, Sergeant Scary.
And he seemed more reasonable, you know.
When did he show up?
At the end of it all.
While they were already putting Shane in the police car, and basically. Four police cars were blocking all the traffic.
That's right. They were all blocking
the
traffic.
So three more police cars.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So actually, when the police officer who had this encounter with you, the one who you're telling us put you in handcuffs and then violently rammed you against, battered you against the fence.
Right. Yeah. I knew the word slammed
you against the fence.
Twice.
Were there any carts... Police cars parked anywhere when that happened,
no.
Or he was on foot.
That's right.
And then suddenly there were how long did it take for four squad cars to get to this?
Let me explain that part.
Okay.
He asked me my name
at your own risk.
He asked me my name, and I have an AKA in the system.
Right.
And because of that, my AKA came back, accused me of giving him a false name, and then that's when all hell kind of broke loose. He used that as an excuse to get even meaner with me.
Now, do you want to go into what that was all about?
The AKA?
Yes. You don't have to. You can if
you
want.
Well, it's complicated, you know. I might as well just be honest. I was transgendered years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's in the system.
What does it mean to be transgendered?
It depends on the person. It means you shoot for to get a sex change, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You go off, just a whole, you know, two-year...
Male,
you know,
to female, female to male?
Well, in my case, it'd be male to female.
Uh-huh.
But,
because you could have fooled me. You look like a man to me.
Well, now, yeah, I had to stop. I was forced off the treatment because of the Santa Cruz police. Because of the Santa Cruz police.
This isn't a previous incident?
Right.
We can talk about that at some point. But so you say that they checked your... You're saying that the officer who arrested you... Let me see if I understand the order. And let me ask Donna this again to try to protect you. And what you might do is you might correct her by talking to her and quietly, and then she can speak. Because I may be all wrong about this. I mean, I don't know all the details, and I'm not a lawyer myself, but I'm trying to make sure that what the statements that are made here can't be used to improperly incriminate you.
Right.
You know, I mean, because statements can be used to all kinds of effects. So
well, I can tell you this much: when the lady on the when I told him that that's right, that's my true AKA. When it came back on the radio with that name. He was really scared. He got back on there and said, "No, that's the wrong person. It's got to be someone else."
This was after the battery, Donna?
No, this was when she was gone, and you know he was looking for a reason to charge me with something. Okay, when I was standing there, and he was running me and stuff like that, and he didn't even tell me I was being detained in the beginning.
Were you? So.
I just went to rest against the pole because I needed some breath, and he said he used that as an excuse as if I was going to bolt or something stupid like that.
How far away was the pole from?
Right next to me. I mean, he grabbed me. In fact, what he did was he clamped down on my shoulder and pulled me like in a spin and then threw me up against the fence.
Did he say anything?
At that point, then he told me I was being detained. He goes, no, wait a minute, buddy, you're being detained.
Did you indicate you were leaving?
No, I just went to rest up against the pole.
And moving from one position to another, how far did you move, would you estimate?
A few inches. I mean, I even told him I just started my HIV cocktail. I'm weak on my feet.
You said that before he touched
right.
you?
Right. Before he even, yeah,
now,
I told
did he
him.
Say anything to you before this happened?
Well, when he was walking up to me in the beginning, I thought he was the cop that was in that car that originally passed by and threatened to ticket me.
I'm not asking you what you said. I'm asking what he said, remember?
He didn't say anything. He just walked up to me and looked at me for a minute and started just kind of trembling. in silence.
He seemed upset.
Right.
And was his hand on his gun? Did he have his hand on any of his weapons?
I think they were out of his pockets, just out.
Okay. And was anyone, and what, he came up and he looked at you, and did he say anything else?
No, you know, it's really weird. I remember him standing there for a good minute, just kind of staring me down, just trying, kind of hoping I would kind of do something or something. And I asked him, are you the cop that was just in the cop car that threatened to give me a ticket?
And what did he say?
And he said, no. And I says, well, I'd like to get his name and badge number.
Okay, and what was his response to that?
He got very, very nasty at that point.
What did he, how did that manifest itself?
Let's see. What were the details after that? My memory is so full of holes. It's so hard to remember these things. It all happened so fast after that, you know. What did he do? I think at that point, I don't remember. I don't remember clearly.
See, he's probably already written his police report.
Right.
I think that's already happened, so we don't have to worry that. Well, we do have to worry that
there wasn't
the
much that we were. That's what I mean. There wasn't really anything that was happening to justify all this.
So you don't you think he did say something after that, but you don't remember what?
Well, he was doing things like, if I could, you know, he'd put his fist up at me, and if I could, and he'd stop himself, and he'd like make half threats and stop. And he was.
This is when you. This is after you said to him, "I'd like the number that the badge number, the name of the police officer in the vehicle." Or?
Well, that's all I remember that happens next. I just remember that when I asked him for that, what did he do? He started walking towards me or something and asking me. Oh, he asked me my name. He started asking my name and information. All
and
that
did
kind
you
of
give
crap.
Him his? Did you give him your name?
I gave him my AKA because I knew it'd be in the system, and he didn't. He didn't accept that.
What is your AKA?
Tammy Maxfield.
And what did he say when you told him that your name is Tammy Maxfield?
He indicated that I was lying to him and that I was resisting giving him my real name. And I said, fine then, you know, if you don't, you know, I just, like, you know what, I was tired then. I just started my meds, and I just, fine then, it's none of your business, I admit, I said that, you know. Because I did give him my name, but he didn't accept it, you know. So after that I said, fine, you know, then it's none of your business.
What did you say to that?
What did he say to that? Oh, then he said, oh, buddy, okay. And then he just started, you know, attacking me pretty much.
And what way did he attack you at that point?
He pushed me down in the ground, I believe. First he handcuffed me.
And how did he handcuff you? Did you say, I'm going to handcuff you?
No, he just grabbed me and bent my arm behind my back and twisted me until I started to be forced down, and then handcuffed me.
Okay.
And then pushed me down into the fence. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And then I think, if I remember correctly, at one point he pulled me back up while I was in handcuffs and jerked me in and out of the fence a couple times.
Okay. Now, was Donna present when this happened or not?
Yeah, she saw him jerk me into the fence.
So why don't you take up the story from here, Donna? What did you see?
Again? Well, first I asked the officer politely, please don't arrest Shane. He's got 56 T cells right now.
Right.
He could die in jail. He's on serious medicine. And he said, he laughed.
Yeah, he laughed.
Like that was an exaggeration.
Right.
He didn't believe it. And
he said he didn't care.
I don't care. So I started asking people
for a camera
to take a picture.
What was the response of the very
people
sympathetic?
Were looking through me. It was just like being downtown in San Francisco, you know, wearing a bag on your head.
I was
head.
Shocked. They were looking straight ahead like it wasn't even happening.
Or any
like
big metropolitan
TV.
Area where people are used
sick
to treating each other with
people.
Blind stares.
No sympathetic people at all.
I call them sleepwalkers.
Actually, two people did stop, and those two people did know Shane.
That's
his
right.
His triad counselor, which is a methadone clinic here in town,
mm-hmm.
that he's been going to for 6 years.
Right.
And Cassidy, a friend and a musician that Shane has helped in the past. And they
right.
just stood there and watched what's going on.
Right.
Which I would like to let everybody know that is the correct thing to do if you see somebody being detained downtown and you don't think it's right, because you could be a witness and you could help this person possibly.
Oh,
the only way we have to fight the police is to resist in some way, and that's the correct way to do it. I do believe
you
that
fight police
we need
misconduct.
To not ignore what's happening to strangers.
Speaking
because,
of what she's talking
believe it
about,
or not, it could happen to anyone.
He kept making references to hippies. The cop did.
What kind of references did he make?
He kept saying, oh, is that one your friend too? Was that one your friend too?
He was referring to Cassidy and the
everybody
triad
around anybody that would come around and even kind of stand around, and if they looked dirty at all or like young or whatever. Is that your friend too? Is that your friend too?
And how many times, without exaggerating, would you right. say he said this?
Three times to three different people.
Uh huh. And what was the response of the three people?
No, or I don't. I'm just, you know, whatever, you know.
Did he just seem to try to discourage people from watching the scene?
Yeah, that's exactly what he was doing.
And you say that the two that
like a dog barking off somebody, you know.
The two friends that you had, or
right.
two people you knew. Did anybody else
Princess.
Stop to watch?
No.
And again, this is what time of day?
1 o'clock. So very a lot of traffic. At least 30 or 40 people passed by.
I'm not very happy to hear this. So, you were upset. You asked for a camera, and you got no response from the crowd. As apparently, you also mentioned that Bliss was up concerned just to quiet everything down and get out of there and so forth. What did you do next, Donna?
I told some students that were walking by, or young people that I thought might be students, this is sexual harassment right here, folks. Giving them an opportunity to see what was going on instead of assume that anybody that's getting handcuffed is already guilty.
Right.
Now, why did you call it sexual harassment? Because of the transgender phenomenon here? Or?
Yes, because I think we acted differently when we found out Shane might be a woman.
And
in the past.
He might be more responsible for slamming him against the fence if it was a woman.
Now the officer, you say, slammed Shane against the fence after he learned that Shane had this AKA of Tammy, right?
And he also made a big deal about my Janus card in my pocket when he found my Janus card. He made a big deal about that. He said, "Well, why are you going to Janus? You know, and why does anybody go to Janus? You know, I mean, come on."
Did you respond to that with anything? Or?
I asked him immediately how he knew that information because I didn't realize he'd found my card.
Right.
I wanted to know how he found that out.
What did he say?
He said, "Oh, I saw it on your card." And I said, at that point, I'm going, "Well, that's my counselor's card."
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. That's true. That's actually what it is. I have a counselor there, a therapist.
A word of the wise, and this, of course, was proposed by Katya Komisarek, who's an attorney and a person who's done seminars on how to deal with the police. What you can do in the police ride, one very good strategy is to say, "I have nothing to say to you. I want to see an attorney." And
right.
then just say nothing more.
Right.
And, you know, that's one thing to do. You don't have to say so with any anger, although you may feel angry and upset. And there's nothing wrong with being angry and upset if something is happening like this. But, you know, obviously it's a judgment call based on how you feel and
right.
what you feel you can do. My response with the police, of course, is somewhat different. I try to draw in other people to be aware of what's going on because I like to see citizens both educated and activated. And, frankly, I think it's very dangerous when citizens turn a blind eye, if
yeah.
the situation is as you describe it,
right.
To this kind of situation. So, again, continuing forward with this, Donna, you asked some young people, you know, look at this kind of harassment, this sexual harassment. We can't let this happen. You know, we should do something. I'm not quoting correctly, but you were making remarks.
I saw the police car showing up and another officer. And
you know the names of the other officers? You mentioned one. Somebody did Sergeant Scary.
No, he had slicked back, light brown hair, 6 foot
yeah.
tall, medium build, lots of teeth. They did not approach us, but I was afraid they were going to start taking Shane away. And so I asked the police officer, please let him go because he's very sick. And again, you know, he's on AIDS. He needs special medicine. I was crying. And before the sergeant, Scary, came over to talk to us, before we were done talking to Bliss and myself, they already took Shane. But luckily, the counselor from Triad did do one good deed besides stopping to observe. He called the social worker to be with Shane during the intake process at the jail.
I also would like to iterate something here, that even the sheriffs, I mean, it's the sheriffs at the jail, because, you know, I kind of, like, know a few of them, they laughed about the whole thing, and they thought it was such a petty, you know, thing that this cop did, that they even let me smoke and all that stuff. They were, like, really cool about the whole thing, like, you know, once the cops were not involved any longer. and it was just them. They were just like, man, this shouldn't be happening to you.
So, who arrived next? Which police officer arrived next after the individual who you're telling us handcuffed Shane?
The Sergeant Scary.
And did he approach either of you?
He took Bliss aside first since he saw the whole thing and got his independent statement, and then he got my independent statement, and they took him away before I could even finish talking.
And then what other officers showed up and when? And where were there cars blocking the street?
Yeah, there was three or four police cars blocking the street.
Couldn't it completely blocking the street?
Completely blocking the street. Mm-hmm.
For how long did this blockage take
20 minutes, 30 minutes.
So the Pacific Avenue was blocked off for, is that accurate in your recollection too, Donna?
Maybe 20 minutes.
So between 1 and 1:30 more or less, we're talking about was it Tuesday?
Yes, Tuesday. Right by the theater.
Tuesday the 25th. This right by the Cinema 9 Theater. The whole street was blocked for 20 minutes. Did crowds of people gather to talk about this at this point? Were there
no.
They all just avoided the scene?
Or? Yes.
I wouldn't expect that. Yeah, I wouldn't expect people to do that.
Very strange.
Everybody said the way to deal with the police is to never say anything to them.
Right.
And three of my friends, I had to argue with them and explain to them that, you know, just because you don't say anything to the police doesn't mean they're not going to attack you.
Right.
And you have to exercise your freedom of speech if you want to have any rights, and they're declining every day, folks, with this Republican administration.
Oh, no,
and
wait,
the
in
things
Santa Cruz, it's
doing.
A progressive administration.
It's supposed
we have
to
Mayor
be
Matthews
progressive.
Yeah, we have Police Chief Scary, Howard Scary. We have City Manager Dick Wilson, the progressive.
Well, Scary seemed like he was sympathetic to me, but he allowed the arrest to take place.
Now, again, the Scary you're talking about is a sergeant. The actual head of the police department is a man named Howard Scary, who is.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if they're related or if it's different.
Sergeant Scary.
He's middle-aged with glasses.
This is a fellow in plain. He would be in plain clothes. He wouldn't be in uniform.
Oh, really?
And he's chief. He's not sergeant. He's chief. Oh. So he usually wears a suit.
Is a sergeant.
Yeah, this sergeant would be probably in uniform. So there were four. What did the other police officers do? They just sort of hang
they
around?
They just hung around in the middle of the street like, oh, yeah, it's just another day.
And
the social worker looked over at us, and she looked very concerned. And I'm very thankful that the triad counselor did contact her to witness what happened to Shane when he did go to the jail, because I was afraid he might get attacked again by someone else if no one was watching.
Well, luckily we have a police agent entering the studio at this time. This is Ray Glock-Grunijk, a notorious scoundrel, vagabond, and windbag, and extraordinaire, I've got to say. And I hate to ask you, Don, if you can share the microphone with this guy, but do you guys know each other previously or not?
I've seen you around.
And I don't know if you've been listening, Ray. This is.
No, I just got here.
We're talking on Tuesday, very briefly, and you're tuned, by the way, to Free Radio 101.1 FM, Robert Norse's show, also known as Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I am he, Robert Norse, and I'm going to recap for Ray what's happened. But I also hope that folks out there might have some thoughts on this, maybe some questions for the people who saw this, or just some reactions. 427-3772. We're talking about an incident that happened at between 1 and 1:30 on Tuesday the 25th, downtown Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue, where Shane here describes he was trying to help a friend do a jump, and the jump a car.
I always do that.
And after a police officer came up, grabbed him, handcuffed him, rammed him into the fence, then now charges him with battery. became upset that he announced his identity or his AKA as Tammy because he's a transgender person. And dragged him off.
Because I knew it would be in the system.
Because what?
I knew it would be in the system. I'm not going by that name.
Oh, okay.
On the street.
But you weren't doing it to avoid justice.
No, I knew it would be in the system.
Right.
I knew that's what would come back on the radio, and
okay,
it did.
Because you're not charged with false information.
No, not at all.
You are charged simply with battery. You claim that battery happened because this officer battered you, and in battering you, your head hit his chest or some such thing?
I think it wasn't even like that much. I mean, I just kind of bounced off his fat belly. kind of thing. And he's saying that I headbutted
him in the
face.
Watch out. Some of us are pretty sensitive about our fat bellies.
He's
here,
claiming
right?
I headbutted him in his face,
step,
you know,
buddy.
In his face. And if you see how tall he
police
is, I couldn't reach his face.
Police officers shouldn't have them, however.
I don't know. I mean,
they should be fit.
Fit, not fat. I don't know. Some of us fat skis might take issue with that. But anyway, so... Now, Ray, of course, hasn't heard all the details, and we've been running through the details and in rather great detail, and I doubt Ray came into the studio to talk about that. But let's... how did the police treat you at the jail? Let me ask you that. How did the deputies treat you?
Oh, in the jail?
Yeah.
They were great. They let me smoke and all that, and they knew that... Because they knew that I couldn't have done what they said I did. They were laughing about it. They were like, yeah, right, you know.
And what are you charged with? What did they say you did?
Battery on an officer.
And battery means unlawful touching.
Right.
Did you get any more details about what they're actually charging you with?
No, not yet.
Okay, so your arraignment is when?
On the 15th of May, I believe. But I have an appointment tomorrow with a lawyer who's going to follow through with all.
What you should do is immediately, as soon as possible, get a copy of the police report.
Do I understand correctly that he was having a friend charge a battery?
Jump start.
So charged with battery?
Yeah.
That's what happens when you charge a battery. You get a punster in the studio, and there's no stopping him. luckily, he doesn't have a mic. Keep control of the mic there, Donna, will you?
Okay. When you're done questioning Shane, I'd like to add a little postscript.
Please do.
Go ahead.
I was talking to my best friend about this afternoon, and she lives in Rio Del Mar. She's middle class. She has children in our schools, and she's a good, regular, democratic person. And... I told her what happened, and she said she had been downtown Saturday with her daughter, and she saw two people being harassed and ticketed by the police, and she thought it was extremely unfair, and she's writing a letter to the city council. It was very petty stuff.
Right.
They made some people cry by giving them a ticket for going the wrong way on
little
their
girl.
Bicycle or
hey,
something
sounds
stupid
like, Pam
like that.
No. I saw CSO Bechtel standing at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific waiting for people to ticket. That's often what she does. I saw that today. She's a CSO, a somewhat chunky woman who, as I've said many a time on the show, unfortunately seems to delight in giving out citations. So she feels no doubt that's the way to,
right.
Get justice done. Some people have, I think, different views of justice than I, obviously. So... Did these were two tickets for bike the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, or there was some?
I think the second one is even more trifling than the first.
What was the second?
I can't remember, but I also know another gentle soul that got a ticket for camping in the woods this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's, of course, in a town that has shelter space for 40, with but 1,500 to 2,000 homeless in the city, and does not instruct its officers at dusk, when they that there's whether there is space in the shelters, so
it's worse than that. It's worse than that. Now the new shelter isn't as friendly to men at all. They mainly cater to women. They're built, you know, for men, family women type thing, and the men have to ride out to churches and stuff, and they don't always have churches available every night.
Well, no, there's never adequate shelter. In fact,
right.
there's virtually no shelter at all. The shelter you're talking about, the family shelter, the Rebel Lee family shelter, is not a shelter. It's a transitional program
right,
that you have
yeah.
to apply for. You can't walk in right. to an emergency shelter needing a place to go. There's only one program for that that I'm aware of. That's what Paul Brindell, who I spoke with at City Council on Tuesday night, head of the shelter project, confirmed. That's the emergency shelter project. There's 40 spaces each night, period. We have a call.
Oh my God.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Shane, Robert, Donna, and Ray. Hello. Hello? Are you there? Speak up.
Checking out.
I guess
can't hear you. Can't hear me now.
Can't hear you.
Can't. I got to find another payphone.
Okay, I mean, I can kind of hear you.
You
still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, but the payphone's messed up.
Yeah, why don't you... Can you find another phone?
I'm sure I can.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That sounds like maybe somebody who saw what happened.
Or possibly someone who has a reaction and or has some similar experiences. 427-3772 is the phone number here in the studio, or you can go to pagesincolor.com.
I'm getting tired, though.
And it looks like you folks may want to, because you are not in the best of health there, Shane. You may want to get some rest. Ray,
yes.
Do you have any questions or comments? Okay. Go ahead, Ray.
I just wanted to say that there are two I'm going to oversimplify here, but there are two problems in law enforcement. One is a problem with an over-rigid enforcement of the law under circumstances where it's not humane or sensitive or particularly helpful to go ahead and enforce the law. But I don't see the situation that happened with Shane as the way he's describing it, as being in that category. I see the situation that happened with Shane as just taking it at face value is not a problem of insensitive or overly rigid law, but rather with apparently an officer, at least as described, and I wasn't there, so I don't know the particulars, that has decided to depart from a rule of law, even a rigid rule of law, and go into exercising fascist power.
Amen.
And that is an entirely separate problem from the major significant problem of overly rigid law. That when, and it's probably the most elementary problem that we have in dealing with so-called law enforcement, when the law enforcement officers are not law enforcement at all, whether it be wise or unwise enforcement, but rather they become the agents of criminality in which they hide behind the badge of the law in order to go ahead and commit crimes against citizens. And that's an independent kind of, well, it's not entirely independent because the overly rigid application of law can give one a sense of power to the point where then they can feel the liberty to depart from law and just to go around engaging in freewheeling intimidation. So I'm not vouching for what did or did not happen here. I haven't heard the cop's story of it, but just as described, this is not a problem of unwise law. This is a problem of fascism in the guise of law, and we need to stand up to that most of all.
So what do you
say?
Yeah, what do you think, callers? 427-3772 if you're callers. If you want to feel like, you know, being a part of this discussion, please do. You can call in 427-3772. Again, the court date, your arraignment, Shane, is?
I believe it's on the 15th of May.
May 15th.
Right.
You know what department or just the arraignment is?
I don't know.
You may not have a department yet. Well, keep us advised and let us know. When you talk to your attorney, you know, is this an attorney, a volunteer attorney, or is this an appointed public defender?
It's a private attorney that I found on the internet who works in town here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's positive.
Okay, because, I mean, I think you need, as I said before, get a police report.
Right.
And see what kind of stories they're cooking up. Right. Don't be surprised at anything.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't worry about that anyway. It's, you know, because, you know, the fact will come out anyway. I mean, you know,
and look for witnesses, and as I suggested to you also, if you feel you've suffered physically or psychologically from this, I would suggest you go to a doctor straight away.
I've already made appointments and stuff to get counseling and
okay.
all that, because I can't even sleep. I mean, I'm just pacing
and
sweating
take,
and
take
pacing
care
and
of your health and try to, you know, remember that these impositions on your liberty and your health and your dignity are something that you have to, you know, find your own calm in the midst of all this, because it's a bunch of crazy shit, man. That's the way I look at it.
Thank you, Robert.
Sure.
So
and you're welcome to stay, but you're also welcome to go in case you're feeling, you know, pooped.
Pretty pooped.
So thank you for coming in. Donna, is there more you want to say or any thoughts you want to put out that you haven't already said?
I just say, please do not turn to stone. Please stay alert and aware. Everybody is your brother and sister, and we better start sticking together before it's all over.
Yeah, and start and no more sleepwalking. Wake up.
Thank you. We've been talking with Donna and Shane, who were victims of, both of them, I would say. Certainly in the sense of one directly a victim, and the second, you had to witness this.
So distraught, she caught the apartment on fire when she was at home, and I was in jail. It was a serious fire, too.
Okay, well, we're...
She was, you know, trying to get communication with people.
Yeah, and you're suffering physical symptoms too, Donna, because it's okay. Well, I go take care of yourselves is all I can say.
Hey, Robert, you're great.
Hey, thank you, Shane. Thank you for being so candid, and hopefully it'll be okay that you were, because at least it got the information out. I can see by the flood of calls, the community is just listening with avid, bated breath.
Yeah, my car radio got stolen too, so I can't even listen on the way home.
Well. For those who haven't heard this whole thing or are interested in what's actually we're talking about, it is archived. HuffSantaCruz.org is where you can go. And you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM. I'm going to play a little street interview action, and then we're going to get to our guest of the moment. And also, I believe we may have a caller calling in as a, with a sort of an update on the city council on a couple of things. Huff has passed a resolution supporting the initiative for a minimum wage that is, may or may not make the ballot, but they did turn in a bunch of signatures, and the city council is sufficiently spooked that they're trying to push a study about the whole issue. In fact, they funded that at the last council meeting. Also, there's issues around a spike in the rape rate in Santa Cruz compared with other cities. That was presented by the Commissioner for the Prevention of Violence Against Women at the Tuesday City Council meeting in the evening. I wasn't there for that, but there were some people in Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, who saw that on the tube and wanted to comment on it, so that may be happening too. In the meantime, here's a little street interviewing, and then we've got Ray here to give us some interesting information, some extremely complex intellectual gyrations, and probably a few bad puns. So stay tuned.
We're pausing here beside the Regal Cinemas Riverfront Twin, actually on the sidewalk, actually in the street, near the River San Lorenzo Bridge, the bridge of the Duck Pond we're talking with.
Waiting on the levee, waiting for the Robert E. Lee.
He may be, but actually I'm waiting for you there, Bill. You have a bike that says, not homeless, not hurting among friends, thank God, membership is available. Inquiries, the unpaid bill. Now, is that someone we know, or is that
That's
just...
That's me, the unpaid bill.
You are the unpaid bill. Now, I know that some weeks ago you organized a protest, or you were planning to organize a protest to deal with, I guess, ticketing of people for sleeping or camping during the day.
Yeah, and they backed down off of me. They would not ticket me or my friends, and so it couldn't be a real protest since the cops backed down.
Well, of course, they always will, and or many times that's one of their strategies. What's been happening since? Well, let me ask you before. What happened before that prompted the protest, and then what's been happening since?
It's part of this new prop that they're passing that they want to limit people to parking lots, get them out of parking lots, get them out of buildings, just general harassment of the homeless that I'm fighting. That's why my sign.
What exactly was happening, the specific kind of protest that... What particular police behavior were you waiting to get ticketed for?
If you are setting up a tarp with a sleeping bag on it and you have your bicycles around it in the park, they were going to give you a ticket for camping.
Even if you weren't sleeping?
Even if you weren't sleeping or intending to sleep there, if you're just using the park.
And did you ever talk to a sergeant or any other police official of the beat, off the beat, saying, I mean, above the beat officer, expressing your concern about this?
Yes, I did. There's also Ranger Wallace has been going around and telling everybody that if they set up a blanket in San Lorenzo Park before 8:30 in the morning, he will give them a ticket for camping. The thing is that the law says sunrise, sunset. And
actually, the law says it's illegal to sleep between 11 and 8:30 in the morning, and illegal to wrap up in a blanket between 11 and 8:30 in the morning. And it's illegal to camp at any time, but camping is setting up camping gear with the intention of remaining overnight.
Yes, but Mr. Wallace has been going around throwing scare tactics into people that don't know the actual law and what it says. And by threatening them, he can cause people to move along and avoid the park and make them try and hide from the law, causing a problem.
Now, your protest was a couple of weeks ago. How many people did you get involved?
I had about 25 people down there at the park with us.
And when did this happen? What was it, a Monday?
We went down on Thursday morning because that's when we visited our son.
And on Thursday morning, about what time?
We were down there at about 8, and then we sat till about noon.
And you were sitting on blankets waiting for the fearsome blanket snatchers or blanket ticketers?
Yes, blanket cops.
So did any cops happen by?
They happened by and stopped and came over and told us that we were creating a organized movement or something that was a tie, you know, this organized event.
Uh-huh.
And I told them that there is no organization as far as I'm concerned.
Very disorganized.
Yes, I'm very disorganized.
So what were they suggesting? You go get a permit or pay an application fee or, you know, rent a hall? What was their suggestion?
I had to go to the city and talk to the parks department and see if I could get a license.
That's what they told you?
For a permit to invite people to my blanket. You know,
who told you that?
I don't know. Hobby.
Hoppy?
Yeah, Hoppy. Anyway, my new sign. I've got to catch my wife.
That sounds like a lot of horse shit, frankly.
No, it is. It's true. Hoppy told us.
No, I mean, it sounds like a lot of horse shit what he told you.
Yes.
You don't need a permit to sit around in the park with a bunch of blankets.
Organize, if you invite people to a timed meeting, an organized timed event.
Not unless you're excluding other people from the area. You can organize anything you want. I mean, if you want to close the space and use it exclusively for, like, say, a fair or something, like a, you know, the Saturday fair was passed yesterday at City Council, that would require getting permits. But this, you know, no. If you want to organize an anti-war rally and you call people to your anti-war rally, unless you've got amplified sound or something like that, you know, you don't have to get a permit.
No, just my loud voice.
Anyway, I've got to
catch my wife, but the sign was...
You can never catch your wife. She has to catch you.
You know, 33 years. Anyway, not homeless, not hurting. A lot of people think that because my wife and I are down here working with the homeless people and doing our thing with the street kids, that we are homeless, and that we just... And so we put a sign up that says, we're not homeless, we're not hurting, and we're among our friends. We're down here because we choose to be.
Now, is there an organization called the Unpaid Bill, or is that just you?
That's me. I am the Unpaid Bill.
Indeed. Any protests coming up? I know you've probably heard about the Jones decision in Los Angeles that throws out the sleeping ban in Skid Row, right?
I didn't hear about that. I'll get that information to you.
Yeah, check it out. So have the police laid off of people with their blankets in the park since your protest?
It's been very strange because, for example, today, Ranger Wallace was running around and telling people all kinds of things on the different areas, but he made an explicit point of writing and not stopping and talking to the group that was around me.
He's sort of ostracizing you, not giving you the tickets that you deserve?
I don't think the man likes me.
For heaven's sake, don't be paranoid.
I'm not paranoid. I'm hurt.
There you are. Thank you, Unpaid Bill. Okay, well, I'm down here in front of New Leaf Market. But New Leaf is going to have to wait because on the line with us is the Zionist menace, Becky Johnson. How are you doing, Becky?
I'm not actually a Zionist, at least not by my definition.
I know you're not, and I'm just using that to taunt other broadcasters, actually.
So that they'll stop listening to anything I say past that point.
Right.
Good tactic.
Yeah, no. Actually, so you are actually, frankly, a well-respected homeless activist. And you,
all right, I thought so.
Yeah, well, I don't know how respected you are.
Sometimes when you're disrespected, that's a good thing too.
That's true. It depends on who disrespects you.
It depends on who disrespects you.
But you are you're a woman who's written a lot on these issues recently. In fact, I saw something this morning about you're concerned about issues of police misconduct. You produce this show. You have your own television show.
And
you're also working on the Jones decision and trying to let people know more.
Sort through it and figure out how we can use it to our advantage, of course.
That's a decision that essentially throws out the sleeping ban, not facially, but it does in practice make it hard for the LA police to go in and arrest people in Skid Row because the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has directed the local district court to find summary judgment in favor of the homeless. So
cruel and unusual punishment, man.
Claiming that it's cruel.
Finally.
It's cruel and unusual punishment to arrest people for sleeping when they have no shelter.
All right. But I'm not here, of those 50 things you named, I'm here with the 51st issue, one that hasn't come up today.
Okay, and that's...
And it was just a kind of a little anomaly that happened at City Council.
Go ahead.
I'm sure it's not an anomaly for the people involved. But the Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women brought back a very extensive a report that had been done by Applied Survey Research in Watsonville, that because they're concerned about the number of assaults against women, there's a spike in the reported rapes, a forcible rape and attempted forcible rape in the city of Santa Cruz, where the city is at 3 to 4 times the state average in rapes. In the 2 years that this study, which was 2003 and 2004, statistics provided to them by the Santa Cruz Police Department, and they reported that the number of reported rapes peaked in 2004 at 59 rapes. Compare this to 20 in 1994. It sure sounds like there is some sort of a public safety crisis here.
Let me ask a question.
Violence against women.
Let me ask a question, Becky. Now,
sure.
The rise from 1994 to 2004. Those are the two comparative the decade.
I'm looking at the Sentinel from Shanna McCord, her article, and she says that there were 30 reported rapes in 1984, 20 in 1994, and 59 in 2004.
And do we have any comments on whether people are feeling more comfortable or more concerned in terms of their willingness to report rapes? Is that a factor at all here?
The study was very extensive. The Commission for Violence Against Women compared five major cities that had different kinds of demographics that could match the city of Santa Cruz in some way. They were looking for a tourist town, they were looking for a university town, they were looking for a certain size town, and so they compared these five other cities against the data for 2003 and 2004, and they came up with some extensive profiles about who the victim was, who the perpetrator was, whether there was a prosecution after that, and came up with some interesting things. Like, I don't have the report in front of me, but it seemed like there were only 20% of the rapes resulted in an arrest, which is a low number. It should be up like around 40%. And the other thing was that when they compared these cities and with their charts, you could see that there was a spike for the city of Santa Cruz for 2003-2004. And so Deputy Chief Patty Saponi came, and she said that that may have been some kind of a statistical anomaly. She says, I'm reading right here from the Sentinel. It says, police officials said the higher number of rapes may be due to more victims reporting such crimes and a new electronic reporting system started in 1999 that better captures crime statistics. So then she says, I can't stand here and tell you that's why we've seen the numbers jump, but that might explain the spike, Deputy Chief Patty Saponi told the council. So there you go. Do we have a very real crisis for assaults against women going on in the city of Santa Cruz that really hasn't been reported? I mean, three or four times the state average should be a cause for concern. What's causing it? Could study that data some more and get some better answers. But also, is the police department, are they trying to explain away these figures and say everything is fine? I don't know what's going on. I have more questions than I have answers, but I thought I'd bring them up here.
How does this impact the homeless situation? Do you have any specific comments about how this would impact homeless women, or have you got any particular reports around that?
Well, I didn't see in the PowerPoint presentation that was at the council a category for homeless women and rapes, but traditionally homeless women are at far greater risk for rape than housed women.
Is this report, by the way, on the online that you've been mentioning that was given? It sounds like, have you actually read?
Yes, you can go to the City of Santa Cruz website. And go to, it is a city commission, the Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women. And on that web page, you can download the 32-page report.
Okay. Because I'm looking at the Google here, and there's no, it's not Googled yet, but I'm sure it's there. So
I had some trouble. I actually, it's my computer crashed in the process of downloading it, so I can't tell you anything beyond that. But it is there, and it can be done. I believe it. I believe it.
Okay, I'm at the website now, and I'm looking to find. Well, I'm looking to find it actually.
But you know, here the new electronic reporting system didn't go in until 1999, and this spike is showing from 2003-2004. So why changing from a manual method of reporting police data to an electronic one? Why you wouldn't notice that in 2000 or 2001? I mean, this is like 3 or 4 years later. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you're saying that what doesn't make sense is that Saponius claimed that, the reason there may be a spike is because we shifted over from one system, the manual, mm-hmm. to the computer, but the system happened 3 years before.
Well, they should, because the statistics are for forcible rape and attempted forcible rape. Mm-hmm. Those are serious charges. And it's unlikely that even if they were doing a manual entry system, that they wouldn't record such serious crimes. So that doesn't make sense either.
And again, we don't have any figures for 1999, 2000, 2001, just for 2003 and 2004.
The extensive study was done for those 2 years with a serious analysis
of data. But what about the specific figures for Santa Cruz? I assume those figures are available. How many
I said 59 rapes reported in 2004.
How many in 1999?
Oh, in 1999?
When they were hand recording it, or 1998?
I don't know. That might be in the report.
Right. I'm actually, for those who want the report, I found it. It's a little lengthy in downloading. But the way you get it is you Google for City of Santa Cruz, go to the website, and you'll see written on the face of the Santa Cruz City website, rape report. And so you'll be able to read about that. Thank you, Becky, for calling in on this. I know that we've talked about, a lot of us have been fighting this, and what people may be wondering why I haven't brought up the issue of the parking lot panic law, the 15 minutes and you're under arrest or get out of the parking lot law that I've been talking so much about in the past. A lot of us have for the last few months.
And they want to know what happened Tuesday at City Council when the second reading was coming and we had our rally and we had people coming down to.
And they're not going to find out. We're not going to tell them.
And now we're not saying anything.
God, they should have come and found out themselves. Well, actually, you want to tell them what happened, Becky?
Well, we sat there and nothing happened. It got very close to 5.
6.
Mayor Matthews said that we'd run out of time to do the item and that they were going to postpone the second reading for the 15-minute rule, then jail, for the parking lot till presumably the next meeting.
Right. And actually,
or maybe never.
That'd be nice.
Which would be better.
I don't think they said that. I think it is. We got to expect to be coming up.
I was thinking never.
Yeah, you were, but probably they weren't. May 9th, I think, is when what they're thinking. And also,
they want it bad.
What we were thinking was that this whole rape issue might become a factor in claiming that such a measure that excludes that radically changes how people are treated and have to consider how they're going to behave in parking lots and garages. That just means not just don't be a rapist, but don't be a reader of books. Don't listen to your car radio. Don't take care of your child in your car for more than 15 minutes. Don't assemble to talk with a friend. You have to, again, change all these behaviors. We had thought that this whole thing about rape might have some impact because, you know, if there's an unusually significant number of assaults and rapes going on in parking lots and garages, that certainly has to be attended to. But I don't think that was mentioned either in the report, and it wasn't mentioned in the whole issue around the 15-minute debate.
Well, when they did the statistics for 2005 for the parking lots and parking structures, they didn't find a single rape or attempted rape in any of those facilities. So I think that some of the commissioners were surprised at that data.
Maybe we can thank those masturbators on all fours for that, because
I'd like to look at the report from the Commission for Prevention Against Violence Against Women. I suspect that most of those rapes occurred indoors and that the parking lots are not prime areas for danger for women.
Okay, well, listen, why don't you...
I have to look at that report.
Look at the report, check it out, and get back to us. And thank you for calling in.
Okay, and thanks to Shane and Donna for coming and telling us that story, and thanks to Ray for being there today.
Thank you. I'm also wanting to do some commentary on your call, Becky. I don't know whether you want to listen to it on the radio or stay on the phone.
I will be nearby.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Becky. Yeah, definitely commentary, Ray. I just want to say briefly, though, that, Becky's quite right, and I think I was also right in suggesting we want to tell people what happened in terms of the 15-minute rule and what that's all about. If you go into a parking lot or garage, there's a law coming up on May 9th that will make it illegal to walk into a parking lot unless you're walking directly through, unless you have a vehicle with you. Either a bicycle or a motorcycle or a car, and then you have to be gone in 15 minutes. Even if you pay for 2 or 3 hours, you have to be gone in 15 minutes. Now, the rape discussion obviously is irrelevant to that issue. The crime discussion that we tried to have a couple of sessions ago, and this is also irrelevant because there's no crime, particularly no particular spike in crime that they've demonstrated.
I'll wait for the other call to come in, but I don't agree that it's irrelevant, and I think it cuts the other way.
Okay, hang on. You're going to get it, Ray. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Ray Robert and whoever you may be.
This is Crow again.
Oh, you can try. Hi, Crow. It's your payphone sucks, but what's the story?
Again?
Yep.
Oh, hi, Crow.
That's another one. I went across town.
It could be that we have some problem with our stuff.
No, it's not your stuff. These payphones in town.
But we can hear you sort of. So go ahead.
Okay. This whole rape thing kind of ties in with the article that I read in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, I believe about 2 weeks ago, where the council members were concerned about rapes and burglaries, and this is one of the reasons why they need to have this 15-minute law. Besides people camping, which is hard to see people camping in these parking lots, because I have never seen anybody camping in a parking lot except for maybe sitting there for a long period of time. They can call that camping, I guess.
Crow, I got to tell you, it really is hard to hear you. I mean, we can hear every second sentence, but it's kind of...
I'll try another phone.
All right. You're kicking out money on payphones. I appreciate it, Crow. All right. Ray, your comments.
Yeah, first of all, sometimes parking garages can be the site of serious crime. In fact, there was a notorious rape murder that occurred in a parking garage in San Jose some time back. But I want to say that taking that at face value, that if you happen to be a woman who's in a car waiting for the driver to return to the car, and you become suspicious of some fellows nearby, one would want to remain in the parked car, but this ordinance would say, no, you're not at liberty to go ahead and exercise your own judgment of self-protection, that if 15 minutes passes, you are required as a matter of law to go ahead and expose yourself by unlocking your car and wandering past the people that you may be suspicious of or concerned about and cannot exercise the option of remaining in the car.
Well, that's not true. You can drive your car out of
no,
there.
No, we're talking about where somebody else is the driver and has the keys to the car. You're just a pedestrian waiting.
Well, why are you waiting there in the vehicle when, in fact, you should know you only have 15 minutes?
Well, she saw these suspicious people that she became. What I'm saying is there are circumstances, a whole plethora of circumstances, and the
Ray,
law...
we are on yellow alert here. There is a terrorist threat, and you're suggesting people should hang out in their cars, in parking lots, wait for suspicious people, and then complain they can't leave?
What I'm really suggesting is that women should be allowed to use their own judgment about whether to stay in the car or whether to leave the car,
and
the city shouldn't be interfering with that judgment.
I can't agree with you, Ray. We must allow the judgment of our wise city council and our city attorney, who have considered all sides of this issue. Ordinary people don't have their expertise and don't really understand the situation. It's all very well to talk about democracy and self-determination, but in fact, we're dealing with the need for... These are hard times. Hard times demand hard solutions. Don't you agree, Ray?
No. At any rate, actually, I do, but not on those terms. I also want to talk about the statistical analysis a little bit.
Go ahead.
It's oftentimes the case that reporting practices do affect crime statistics, and reporting practices can be from several sources. One source can be if there's changes of culture, so that women in one decade feel freer to talk about sex or sexual attacks than they do in another culture. I'm not aware of any drastic changes between the 80s and the 90s and the 00s that in terms of reporting. We're talking about between the 50s and the 60s, that'd be one thing. So I do not think that it's likely to be due to cultural changes. Another thing could be if somehow the police had an affirmative action program that would make women feel more welcome and citizens feel more trusting of their police. Everything I've seen in the Santa Cruz police lately would make the ordinary citizen feel less trusting of their police.
Like what?
Not more trusting, because they go around intimidating people and being menacing.
Now, wait a minute. Have you seen any
yes,
of this
I have
happen?
Seen
well,
some
tell me what you've seen recently that you would say, Jeff.
Just the mannerism and demeanor of various police are oftentimes very discourteous to the ordinary citizen. And remember, the rape victim is oftentimes a person who is seen but as being marginalized, which is precisely the kind of person that the police are oppressing. So they are not likely to be more trusting in the police and reporting more. And I think you have a caller that should be interrupting me.
I have to agree. Hi there, caller. You're on the air with Ray and Robert.
I'm trying from another phone. Is
Great.
This any better?
Much better. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Crow.
Okay, so let's see where I was at. When I was reading in the Sentinel about 2 weeks ago about, the council members talking about making it an official about the 15-minute law, they commented on that there has been so many problems in parking garages and so forth, like people getting raped or attempted rape, burglaries and so forth. Like to reiterate what I've said before, usually these type of people do not stay longer than a couple minutes. And so it really doesn't affect, these people who come in either burglarized or attempt rape or other, sorts of crimes, because they usually do these things in a matter of minutes. And this whole thing about camping, the parking attendants or the people who go around and check the parking tires and whatever, so forth and so on, are complaining about people camping and so forth. That's very few and in between. But they did bring up the whole thing about rape and the spike in rape. And I love how the Sentinel tries to tie all these things in, because it is a one-sided report by the Sentinel. Another thing, I want to say to the guests that you had on that I was really sorry that they had to go through something like that, because it shouldn't be illegal to try to jump start somebody's car. Basically, what this person went through is an atrocity, if that's the proper word for it, to actually get locked up in jail for trying to jump start somebody's car. The officer really needs to be named. Does anybody know the officer's name?
I believe that Hernandez was the name given out, but again, we had the officer's badge number. I think it was, let me see if I wrote it down when it was being said. It is, of course, on the tape.
Okay.
If you play back, that is, if you play back the show on huffsantacruz.org,
okay.
You can get it. It's online. And I said this before, I think we had this discussion perhaps earlier, that, the claim of the people supporting this law, Matt Farrell, for example, the public works guy who wrote the staff report, is that the main problem in the parking lots is not rapists and serious criminals. And as
well, that's not what I read. I mean, they pointed out that's one of the problems.
Well, the main the word rape is never used in these hearings that I'm aware of.
Oh, in the hearings, yes. No,
right.
I'm talking about the article in the Sentinel.
Right. Well, I don't know. I'm surprised at that too, because it never came up in the hearings.
No, of course not.
And it didn't come up in the staff report or from the police department either.
Yeah, of course.
So
not.
They didn't claim that. But what
no,
they claim
no,
was
they have to stick
their main
to legal
problem.
Terms.
Their main problem is campers. That's their main problem. Their main problem is urination and defecation. Their main problem is, I'm looking at the stats here, and if you actually consider all the incidents that happened over the 2005, I'm looking over the staff report, they involved a total of 63 calls for camping, 47 calls for burglary, 41 calls for suspicious persons or circumstances.
Oh, that's what I read in the paper,
and
yes.
And 31 calls for disturbing the peace. There's no assault on here at all.
Okay.
There's no assault category. These are in the garages. Now,
I read that in the sentence.
Let me finish. These are not the. That only makes up, I believe, 34% of the calls. So the rest of the calls were for things like the police decided to drive through themselves, and they admitted when they spoke about this before the downtown commission that their own drive throughs they log as calls for service. Now, that doesn't mean that there were a lot of them, because apparently there were complaints that they don't do it enough, but those were part of those statistics. So that's part of it, too. Another part of it was there is a smaller number of things like, they pointed this one out later, petty theft, vandalism, fight, assault with a deadly weapon. Although these are stats for four lots that they chose, and they chose
right.
The worst lots, like Elm Street across, right outside the Catalyst,
right,
and also next to the homeless meal, where a lot of folks might get cited for camping or sleeping or some such things, where that would be regarded as criminal behavior by the police and by human rights violators who have inveigled themselves into positions of power on the city council. And institutionalized the crime of this, the institutionalized hate crime of the sleeping ban that they passed.
Yeah.
So let me. What are the points do you want to make?
Oh no, that's it. I just want to tell you, thank you for letting those guys. I mean, just what you were telling those guys who were on your show before. You're doing a great job and helping people that get into problems, and we need to do more. And I want to support whatever you're doing about it, and keep up the good work.
Well, I know we'll be playing an interview of yours, if not today, then maybe on Sunday, about how you, and I actually heard this from a second person today, how you you were approached by the militant officer Brandt.
Yeah. Well, let's stick to the subject here, because that's more important.
Right. Well, the subject is police misconduct. Ray is
raised
the issue.
No, he was just checking on my permit.
No, he was being rude and abusive and looking for an opportunity to disperse a lawful assembly. That's what he's doing.
The guy's a dick, okay? He's going to be a dick till the day he dies.
Well, that's fine, but he shouldn't have a uniform, a gun, and a salary to go with it. I'm sorry, that should not be part of that.
Oh, there's lots of those around.
There certainly are.
Okay,
thanks
for
calling in, Crow. Phone line's open, 427-3772. And over to you, Ray.
Yeah, I wanted to, I don't know how many of your other listeners or whether you had heard the NPR report on the relationship between rape and homelessness in the Skid Row area of Los Angeles, which is the area that the Jones case was about.
Tell me.
It reported, I found this statistic to be shocking, and if I misheard it, please have somebody correct me, that a woman who is on the streets in Skid Row for 2 weeks has a 70% chance of being raped.
Wow. Of course, that would be that Mike Rotkin would say, that's why we should criminalize
now,
camping on the streets.
I have a comment to make about that after your next caller is finished.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Robert. How you doing?
Hey, Andrea.
You know, I got to say, when I was listening to your show about a week ago, I remembered I heard Becky Johnson call in, and I remember hearing Becky say something about Like if a homeless person or whatever, a poor person gets a ticket to go to court and plead not guilty instead of guilty.
Correct.
Well, I was going to try to take her advice. I went over there by Jeffrey's restaurant, and I had a different sign this time. It said disabled, need meds, and it had some prescription receipts on it. And lo and behold, the same asshole that approached me last July shows up again, and I was going to be willing to do that. I figured, fuck it, let the guy give me a ticket, I'll swallow the ticket, I'll go to court. No, this asshole pulls up and gets out of the car and tells me that I'm in an illegal spot and I have to leave, and if I don't do so, he's going to physically remove me. And right at that time, it was weird because I looked over and Mike Tomasi just happened to be coming by, and Mike kind of looked over and I said, what do you think, Mike? The guy's threatening to physically remove me if I don't leave. What do I do? And he just kind of looked and he goes, you should move, Andre. He goes, just move, because I didn't think he wanted to see me, get in trouble or whatever. But yeah, it was the same guy, and I told him straight up.
Andrea,
I go,
Let me ask you, where were you?
I was over there by Jeffrey's restaurant.
You were by Jeffrey's. Were you now? Were you? You were on the median.
Yeah.
And who is the police officer? Do we know?
Sergio Venegas, the same guy that came up on me last July. I couldn't believe it, man.
And was he which police department?
Police, Santa Cruz Police, of course. Oh yeah, black uniform, all of it. Santa Cruz
and what,
Police.
What ordinance did he say you were violating?
He didn't even say. He just came up. He drove up to the light, and he was sitting there, and he kind of looked at me, and I wasn't making eye contact or anything, and I was like, oh, shit. And then he goes, and then he said something. He goes, ma'am, excuse me, but you're illegal sitting there. And then he didn't even say anything about ordinances. He just said, ma'am, you're illegal sitting there. He said, you need to pick up your stuff, and he said, you need to move right now. And then he flipped a quick U-turn, and he, like, pulled up onto the curb right there, and he got out of the car and he walked over to me and he said, look, he said, I'm not going to tell you again. You need to get up and you need to get out of here and you need to leave or I'm going to physically remove you.
Now, did you have a wheelchair or a walker with you?
Walker, yeah, and my crutches.
Wow.
Oh, and I said, officer, I showed him my prescription slip. I said, look, officer, I have been fighting with, you know, the people at the county building and all this and that, and I'm not getting the help that I need. I said, look, here's this letter from this lawyer to them saying that they need to address this crisis immediately, and they gave me the prescription slip that has refused to pay for it, and I'm just trying to get up enough to get my medication because without it, I cannot function, and I only need another $25, and as soon as I get it, I swear to God, I'll be gone, and I won't be back, and he was just a total asshole, man.
Well, let me ask you this. How long have you been doing this regularly?
No, I haven't been out there since last July when he came up and chased me off last summer. I haven't even been back there. And then on top of it, to make matters worse, thankfully enough, actually, I came home and I wound up calling Becky, and Becky was nice enough to loan me the money to get my medication. So thank you so much, Becky, because you did save my ass. And when I was leaving Becky's house, I was on my way over to Costco with my prescription slip, and lo and behold, there was a guy standing there with a sign, just standing there, you know, panhandling away.
Well, we don't want no women doing that. It's for your own safety, man.
Yeah. He told me that the first time. He goes, you know, I'm really doing this for your own safety. I said, no, you're not. I said, you're interfering with my ability to survive. You're not helping me. You're hurting me. Oh, man, Robert. Ouch.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking over the panhandling ordinance of the city of Santa Cruz, which I always carry
mm-hmm.
with me for such
Yeah, I got
moments
it right here,
like
too.
This. And I find under that it really, there was an interesting, originally in 1994 when this was produced, there was no, what you were doing was not illegal, at least under this ordinance.
Yeah.
It did say that you can't solicit at a bus stop and in a bus.
Yeah, so
you can't solicit in a vehicle on private property within 14 feet of an entrance,
mm-hmm.
within an
mm-hmm.
entranceway, 50 feet of a bank.
Yeah.
And the variety of places.
I know.
In fact, I'm looking for this. There may be an additional factor. Let's see. In any
one officer told me that you cannot solicit to a person who is in a vehicle on the public highway.
Interestingly enough.
But you can hold a sign at the median as long as you're not soliciting. Now, that doesn't help her in her circumstances get her $25. But if you want to just hold a sign there saying, vote against Councilman so-and-so or urge your council to defeat this particular ordinance or whatever, you're permitted to go ahead and hold such signs, including in the media, and as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, and it was just hanging on my walker, you know, it just says disabled need meds, and I had, you know, I made copies of my receipts. It shows what I've been paying for my medication, and, you know, and I'm always really passive. I don't look at the drivers.
Well,
I just sit there all passive and peaceful, and I told him, I said, officer, I'm not bothering anybody. I said, I've been here for an hour, and I've already made like $8. People are wanting to help me, and you're just interfering with
me,
you know?
Interestingly enough, in 1994, it was illegal to solicit either to or from a vehicle,
mm-hmm.
but soliciting meant a verbal request. In 2002, the city council, in its wisdom, changed this to mean a sign as well as
right.
a verbal request.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, in theory, it became illegal for people to hold up signs anywhere on Pacific
yeah.
on Pacific Avenue because the 14-foot provision that says you have to be 14 feet from a building doesn't
yeah.
just apply to the individual holding up the sign. It applies to the people who are being solicited. So it means if anybody
yeah.
who is closer than 14 feet to a building
right.
Is being solicited by your sign, that is illegal.
Yeah.
And therefore, I mean, the law, of course, is completely preposterous. Anyway, I'm glad you got, you know, some temporary help. This is all a bunch of... I don't know. I mean, I've used the word bullshit too many times in this show. It loses its effectiveness. Thank you for calling in, though, Andrea.
To make matters worse, the two little rent-a-cops up at the county health clinic, I was there a week ago, and they got all over me and was telling me, oh, you can't just be walking around the clinic, going wherever you want. And I said, look, I just need to get a couple signatures on a couple pieces of paper. And even that jerk-off, he got in front of me and wouldn't let me get in the elevator, and he said the same thing. He said, Megan, you need to leave, and if you don't leave, I'm going to call the police, and I will have you physically removed.
What clinic was this?
The Santa Cruz County Health Clinic at Emmeline.
So, it's interesting. What you need to do, Andrea, is to, first of all, always address these people in a measured tone of voice, even though they're acting outrageously. Secondly, invest in a tape recorder and record what they're saying.
I tried to, and then he, turned his back on me, and he didn't want to talk to me.
Well, then what you do is then continue to go about your business, because if you are legally engaged in your activity, and then they wish to mess with you, they're in trouble. It is true you take a certain risk there, but I'm going to roll on you.
Yeah.
And remember, this is my offhand thought. I mean, think about it some more before you... People in positions of authority get cranky. It looks like Ray wants to say something to you. Go ahead, Ray.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, actually, it appears, just on the face of it, that the ordinance 9.10 called aggressive solicitation definitions.
Yeah.
And it's made to be a crime as aggressive solicitation
yeah.
to go ahead and solicit a person who is in a vehicle. Now, the point that I want to make is, I mean, whatever we think about whether it's a wise or an unwise law
uh-huh.
In terms of traffic safety is another debate. But what I'm wanting to say is that how this distorts our ability to even think about these issues, because if there's a rationale to that law that is humane and intelligent, the rationale would be in terms of traffic safety. It is
yeah.
not an aggressive form of solicitation. It is labeled by the city council as aggressive soliciting, so
yeah.
they can evoke notions of violence and terrorism around solicitation. When I ask a person who's in a car, you know, I'm hungry, please give it to me. I need medicine, please give me a quarter.
Yeah.
Even if I'm saying something to them, that's not aggressive. That's a humane request. But our city council is so eager to jump on the terrorism bandwagon that this kind of thing is called aggressive solicitation.
Thanks, caller. Ray, that the reality, of course, that's the label they used to sell it in 1994, and it became even more preposterous when they claimed that a sign saying, you know, need help is aggressive solicitation. We have in the studio with us a new special guest, Linda LeMaster, former chair of the former Homeless Issues Task Force, co-founder of Housing Now. Democracy would be good, too. Housing Now in Santa Cruz. And I don't know, what other scurrilous activities should we hold you accountable for?
Well, I spent 8 years on the Commission for Prevention of Violence Against Women, which I heard you talking about on my way here,
right.
including a couple terms as chair. And the only time in my life I was dismissed due to term limits. I find that interesting.
Yeah.
And in that context, what you were saying earlier, I'd like to say that what the police chief said for her reasoning that she wanted to sound so offhand that maybe their new record-keeping system had something to do with the spike, that's not true, because when I was on the commission, and I'm sure to some extent, perhaps even more thoroughly today, since they have applied survey research working for them, every sexual assault and maybe sexual assault that the police department writes a police report on is read by one or two members of that commission. The whole report is read, except for names being blacked out.
And so the point is that...
Well, whatever the spike is, it has... I happen to know it can't have anything to do with changing from manual paper files
to computer
electronics.
Files, right.
That's looking back at an earlier thing we were talking about. But you just came from a, what, some sort of hokey poverty pimp banquet of some sort?
Well, I hate the way you do that. It's like, yeah, like the way you introduced Becky when she called in.
As a Zionist terrorist, yes.
I mean, perhaps I, too, am a poverty pimp and could take offense at that.
Actually,
I'm too poor, but...
I'm not sure I regard you as a poverty pimp, nor do I regard Becky as a Zionist terrorist, by the way.
I didn't think so. You just like to poke at people.
I just have my suspicions, that's all.
So, yes, I just came from the 7th annual Soup Line Supper, which is a...
Which had no soup and no supper for
the
homeless.
It had tons of soup. In fact, they're still selling the extra soup. A lot of restaurants...
Wasn't this expensive to get into?
Well, from my point of view, it was expensive,
I mean,
but nothing compared to gasoline right now.
For poor people, right? You don't get to get in
no,
there.
No, it isn't an event given to honor poor people.
Ah,
it's
I
a fundraiser.
It's a label to get the people to give up money for their services.
No, it's a fundraiser.
Fundraiser, I see. Okay,
and
go ahead.
And the time I was there, with people still coming after this was announced, they raised, excuse me, $41,000 for people coming to eat soup together and I guess see which of their friends came and watch all the people running for office behind the server line serving your choice of soups. There were tons of soup. They're still selling it.
I don't want to hear about the soup.
Soup to go was a new feature of the benefit.
Nobody is going to get any soup who's hungry out of this unless they get...
Well, I ate well.
Yeah, but you had to pay to get in, didn't you?
Yeah.
Right. So... My question here is what did you learn at this event? What did you learn, for example, that these fine homeless providers are concerned about the criminalization of the homeless that will happen in the parking lots and garages in 2 weeks?
No, nobody talks about that.
Satisfied fundraising mouths?
Robert, you're going to be very disappointed in my report if you're looking for politics and conflict. That's why I brought this in about the Denim Day in Santa Cruz, which is tomorrow, midday at City Hall Courtyard. Encouraging women to show up in jeans to register their protests against dumb judges who think it's women's fault when they're raped or
just women or women and
public.
Men both.
What?
In denim. Just women to show up or women and men both?
Well, I don't know what they intend, but I certainly wouldn't make a distinction there.
I'm asking,
in my
are you inviting just women or are you inviting women and men?
I'm inviting anybody within range of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Okay.
But it's not my event.
Right,
but I think they'd be insane to exclude either men or women if they want to make a point. They need a lot of people to get heard around here. Nothing else seems to work.
And people should know about that event. However, again, it's an official city event.
Is it?
Yes. It's been well publicized all over the place. You can see posters and flyers. And, of course, it was hooked up with the Santa Cruz City Council presentation. Not that it shouldn't be. But I'm frankly more concerned about what happened at the Homeless Service Center because that is not hooked up with the city.
But
you don't get to hear
I told you pretty much.
About it, frankly. That's all
there were over 350 people there. In my opinion, this fundraiser that happens every year in the spring has outgrown its site, which right now it's closing up at Holy Cross, what's it called, Parish Hall. And they had, I would say, the equivalent of every table that could maximally seat eight people.
A lot of people were there.
Twice.
Let me ask you,
twice.
A lot of people were there. Let me ask you again the questions that concern me. What did you find about civil liberties concerns for the homeless at this?
Nothing. I asked the director of the four shelter programs that this Soup Line Supper is to support if he would make an announcement for me that street spirits were available and point to the table I was at. And he kind of nodded, but he didn't do it. I also suggested he announce that there was soup to go again, and he did do that. So he is paying attention to the purpose he's there for.
Soup to go for what?
People who want to take home some food.
To what? To their homes and their well-fed families, or to somebody on the streets, or what are you talking about?
Well, once you buy it, you can give it to whoever you want. I brought you some, but you didn't seem interested.
No, I'm not interested in their soup. I am interested in knowing what these folks are willing to do, these great homeless providers, in terms of, because they're providing zilch emergency shelter tonight. 40 spaces is zilch shelter, and they aren't doing anything about it. Apparently, however, they don't mind raising lots of money. Where is this money going to go to, Linda?
Well, to run these four programs. And one of them, the new family shelter, is a very expensive proposition if they really do it the way they've promised their funders, including the state and the feds, that they would do it, because it means meeting any needs that stand in the way of a family who gets into that shelter of their becoming mainstreamed. which I have a bit of an issue with. But
I mean, I've heard concerns about, you're talking about the large structure at the corner of Highway 1, or actually it's Coral Street and River Street. It's used to be actually where Free Radio was at one time, for a very brief period of time. A little secret note for all of you Free Radio buffs. I've heard, I mean, the family shelter, it costs, what, $6 million, something like that?
I'm not good at numbers.
I'm not sure how many million. Anyway, I know that you might have just, did you mention to any of them that there was a criminalization of the homeless measure coming up in 2 weeks at City Council?
I talked to a few people who seemed a little wide-eyed. They didn't sound like they were going to go to the City Hall.
What about Ken Cole, the executive director, gets paid a salary, has a nice house, and has a car, drives to work every day, but doesn't seem to find his way into any kind of public concern about. Actually, he actually publicly expressed support. He didn't. He was asked by Matt Farrell if there's any problem with this driving homeless people out of the rain, into the rain from the parking structure. His response was, "Well, if it's not safe in the parking structures for anyone, then it's not safe for the homeless."
Well, as he's told you, he doesn't see himself as an advocate for his constituency.
Just a money-consuming head of the homeless service center.
I don't see that.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Linda, Robert, and Ray.
Robert, I have a quick question. It's
very,
very important. The officer, I forgot to tell you, he pulled a camera out of his pocket and he snapped a photo of me. Do I have the right to have a copy of that picture? I'll take my comments off air.
Okay. I can't give you a definitive answer legally because I don't know what the law is nor what the police practice is. But anybody can take your photo in public. A paid police officer who does so and then puts it in a file, if you're not engaged in criminal activity, might be accused of doing a Vogel, as we call it in Santa Cruz, or engaging in spying inappropriately and collecting information for some political purpose, which has nothing to do with crime. They, of course, were suspecting you of a crime. We have about 5 minutes left. Linda, let me give you an opportunity to say anything else you want around what you observed at the Homeless Service Center or about Homeless Service Center activities generally. And you're going to have more time in a future show because I think maybe you reflect
well,
on that.
Well, as I said, there wasn't a lot in terms of what your show or program is supposed to do. But there were a lot of people there, and there were a lot of people who wanted to help, like Tony Madrigal serving desserts, and a lot of young people and children trying to help clear tables. I was impressed at the deployment of volunteers and wannabe volunteers.
Right, you mean help this
people
little...
People helping
little,
this
the,
event.
The dog and pony show, right. Hang on a second. We have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi, Robert. This is Bob. I'm down here at the...
Delmar Theater?
Yeah, Delmar Theater.
Right.
And I have one of the people that helped put it on together, Jimmy Kelly. And he'd like to promote another event and talk about this one a little bit. Would you put him on the air?
You got 2 minutes and I'm out of here. Go ahead.
Okay, here's Jimmy. Hi, Robert.
Hey, Jimmy.
How are you?
Good. Hey, how you doing, Jimmy?
Hey, it's really great. And our film festival is doing real well, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about an event coming up on May Day Eve, if I may.
Sure, you may. I just hope your film festival will provide some actual local films about the Santa Cruz homeless, which I understand it has zero of, unfortunately.
We are open to having films about working people and their issues. Just submit them to the Real Work Film Festival, and we'll screen them and try to get you a venue, if possible, to show them. It's a pretty open and participatory thing. We're always looking for volunteers.
Sounds good.
We're always looking for new films. And next year, hopefully, if you have one like that, please send it to us.
We got lots of them.
What's that?
We have lots of them, but go ahead.
Yeah.
What's coming up?
What's coming up? Well, tonight we're doing Sir No Sir, of course, at the Del Mar. It's about the activists in the GI movement against the Vietnam War.
Name of the film again is?
Sir No Sir.
Yes, Sir No Sir?
Sir, no, sir.
Sir, no, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes, sir. Go ahead.
And one of the events I'm putting on this Sunday on May Day Eve is a woman by the name of Ronnie Gilbert. She was a singer with Pete Seeger in the group The Weavers many years ago and was blacklisted in the 50s. And she remains an activist to this day. She's 80 years old, and she's going to read from a play she wrote about Mother Jones. You know who Mother Jones is?
I do. Jones. She was one of
those
Tommy
that may not. She
from
was
the
a
early,
radical activist.
Yes.
One of the founders of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World.
Right.
She led a march against child labor took thousands and thousands of children from Philadelphia all the way to Long Island, New York, and to Teddy Roosevelt's house to protest the conditions of children that were working at the time, and was instrumental in initiating the change to ban child labor in the United States. Ronnie Gilbert did a play about Mother Jones, and she's going to read from that at the Quimbo this Sunday at 7 o'clock. Along with her will be David Winters doing jazzy labor music, and we, our local Raging Grannies, the people that kind of helped break the story about domestic spying here in California by our National Guard. And also Fred Hirsch, a local plumber activist, will be talking about May Day, its history, and its significance today. Also bringing a worker from Maradosia, Illinois, and he's going to be, he's with the Boilermakers Union. The lease corporation has taken over their plant where they had worked for many, many years without a labor dispute, and decided last year that they were going to tell them that they had to take a pay cut. And they said, well, gee, that's really tough. And then they said, well, then not only that, we have to cut your health care. They said, well, that's pretty awful, but, you know, we'll try to deal with that. And then they said, oh, by the way, we're going to eliminate your pension. At which point they said, you know, this is a bit much, and they weren't willing to agree to that. So the company just said, okay, well, we're not just going to let you work anymore. They locked them out. We have a brief 20-minute video about their struggle, and they'll be here to talk about it along with Ronnie Gilbert of the Weavers. So it's going to be an exciting evening at Quimbo, and we hope that your listeners will come by and join us in solidarity, because this May Day is probably going to be the biggest May Day since the original one. Originally, Jimmy, May Day was founded.
We're out of time, Jimmy.
Oh, okay.
Thanks, Robert. We're talking 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, Puma Jazz Center. Tickets to Streetlight Records.
On Sunday. Okay, thanks a lot, man.
Okay, do you want him back?
Very briefly.
Sure, just very briefly. All right. All right, Robert, thanks. I thought maybe you'd like to hear a little right on report there from the street.
Yeah, and we'll hear more maybe on Sunday. I know you have the Saturday meeting of the Human Rights Organization, 145 at 115 Coral Street, the Dining Bay, for those
who
are interested.
Exactly right.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you then.
All righty, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that is about it. Although we will wait for the elephant in the tea room, I should say, for the for Uncle Dennis to come crashing through the door, which will happen very soon. And Ray, I want to thank you for coming on the air. This better not be a repeat caller. We'll get the call. Yes, caller. Whoops.
That is a repeat.
It was a repeat.
I heard
that caller too.
No.
Keep the door locked. We don't want him to come in yet. All right, so this is it for this particular edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Thanks to Linda LeMaster. Thanks to Ray Glock-Grunike. And thanks for the patience and gentle attitude of our incoming host, Uncle Dennis. I'm Robert Norse. I will be with you, assuming I can finish this particular broadcast, on Sunday, and hope you come back. That'll be at 9:30 in the morning. Meantime, call 423-HUFF. With any comments, remarks, concerns, or complaints, and also any reports about the police. You're on free radio.
Hey, you are, Robert. Hello, Robert.
Yeah, I'm here, but my show is over.
I know your show is over.
Right. Go ahead, but you're still on the air. What is it?
On the air?
Yes.
Well, say your balls out on your radio show, and this is something that's being missed by me.
Not hearing you quite clearly, but maybe we can do this next show.
Yeah, your show was excellent, and it's being missed by many. And I like your guest. He's got some very informative information for everybody.
Much thanks, Gro. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides. We're going to roll into a little musical. Here's a little Frank Zappa. I think it's... No, not Frank Zappa, but it's somebody. Let's see who it is. Unless you got some music there, Dennis? Okay, let's see what we got here. Thanks for being with me.
In Jesus Thinks You're a Jerk, which I found one of the most impressive songs on the last tour from the new ones, the whole bit...
I don't slug it.
consider the ramifications of my shovel, loving the consequence of uprooting the jungle. I'm hugging the second of Gemini, stupid contenders from viewing the puzzle. I don't budge the motives, encased inside the gore, the tongue of chorus.
We're searching for another CD here, so don't give up. This is still Free Radio, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Got some fine music coming up and from the cream to the dregs, so don't go away. Uncle Dennis is a man with more musical taste than I've got, that's for sure.
She asked him why.
Why I'm a hairy guy. I'm hairy noon and night.
Nighty-night, night.
My hair is a fright. I'm hairy high and low. Don't ask me why,
'cause he don't know.
It's not for lack of bread, like the grateful dead,
darling.
Give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining and gleaming. Shoulder length longer.
Ask you, baby, there, mama. Everywhere, daddy, daddy, hair.
Grow it, show it, long as I can grow it, my hair. I let it fly in the breeze, then get caught in the trees. Give a home for the fleas in my hair. A home for the fleas, a hive for the buzzing. The wonder of my hair. Grow it, show it, long as I can grow it, my hair.
I want it long, straight, curly, fuzzy, snaggy, shaggy, ratty, mappy, oily, greasy, fleecy, shiny, steaming, gleaming, flaxen, and waxy.
Knotted, polka dotted, twisted, beaded, braided, powdered, flowered, and confetti, mangled, tangled, spangled,
and spaghetti.
Oh, say, can't you see my eyes? If you can, then my hair's too short. Down to here, down to there, down to there, down to where it's not by itself.
Don't ever have to cut it, 'cause it's not by itself.
Oh, give me a head with hair, long, beautiful hair, shining, gleaming, streaming, flaxing, waxing.
Now won't you give me down to there,
hair,
shoulder length.
Merely
on your way. If you have found your way up to the light of day and think you can't go on any further, I'll take your hand in mine. I'll take you out of time to show you world that you've never ever dreamed of. Oh, you'll be a queen and a stout Egyptian slave girl. All your moments will light up high in space, girl. You won't be bored, now you'll be adored. And all I ask for is the right to vibrate in the happy light of your face, girl. Well, it's coming soon on its way in a big truck, double fifthman, so super automatic, make your mind stand up on its hind legs and jump.
If you're liking what you're hearing tonight, you are listening to, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz, broadcasting at a frequency of 101 megahertz on the FM dial. We're also available at www.freakradio.org. I'm your Uncle Dennis. You're listening to From the Cream to the Dregs, a weekly exploration of the music of the 60s and 70s. We have lots of good stuff coming up tonight. 9 o'clock, we'll have more music. Because due to a DSL outage where I live today, I wasn't able to gather any Earth First news. We'll see what we can do about that. And between now and 9 o'clock, we may have some news. And then at 10 o'clock, of course, we have our mystery guest, our mystery group listener contest. So, and, of course, the Brew of the Week coming up in a few minutes, so stay tuned for all of that. But right now we have more music.
Shouting and crowds and cheering, there's so much laughter. open up the